And welcome to the Next Gen Enterprise podcast series brought to you by Hollow Spirit. My name is Anna-Nienke, and in this podcast series, I will talk to all those who are doing the future of work. These pioneers and experts will share their successes, their best practices, but also their failures and any interesting lessons they've learned. So we hope this podcast will be an inspiration to all those on their journey towards a new way of working. Also, don't forget to mark your calendar for March 26th and 27th of 2020 and book yourself a ticket to Paris, because we'd love to see you at the Next Gen Enterprise Summit, organized by MAVE, Manpower, Octo Technology, and Hollow Spirit. Visit thenextgenenterprise.com for more information and tickets, and I hope to meet you there. Thanks for tuning in today, and let's get started with today's guest. All right, we're here today with Tom van der Lubbe. He is co-founder of Visie, a mortgage company in Amsterdam in the financial sector. Tom, great to have you on the podcast here today.
Thank you very much.
For the people who don't know you yet, can you tell us a little bit more about you and your background? Because it might not be a background you'd expect from someone who ended up with a company in the financial sector. Can you tell us a little bit about you?
Okay, so I'm Dutch. About my background, when I studied, I thought I would like to be a diplomat, but I'm not so diplomatic. So I studied history, politics, also a little bit of economy, and then I went abroad. I studied in Paris and Berlin, and then I ended up in a totally different field. I started as a consultant at McKinsey, didn't like that as well, so I started to become a financial planner because I wanted to be independent, just to do my own thing. So I think the main thing is that I'm entrepreneurial. And then you're ending up, let's say, starting a company like Visie then years after, because first I also worked in a corporate, but I think that's the main thing, and also the bridge to the topic of holacracy is being independent.
Right, and so you started Visie, when was this?
I think 9 years ago now.
Yeah. And you have been working with holacracy for a while now. When did you implement it? Do you remember?
I'm always, let's say, really have difficulties with remembering exact dates. But I think we started, let's say, 4 years ago, I guess.
4 years.
And the whole idea, and that's why I also said I wanted to be independent, was that at a certain, let's say, time where we decided to become entrepreneurs, I think the main motivation was that we wanted to work for ourselves. So from the beginning, there also was this idea, when we want to build a company and it becomes much bigger and we don't want to be micromanaged ourselves, then we also shouldn't micromanage other people. And this has been, let's say, the case from the start. But in the beginning, it's very simple because the company is very small, so there aren't any other people you can't manage. So you don't have that problem. And then when it becomes bigger, you start to think about, okay, did I end up in my own company being a kind of manager in a company I quit in the past? And then you start searching for other solutions because, it's a little bit of a strange situation. That you start to treat other people like the way you didn't want to be treated yourself.
Right, and when did that happen? Do you remember that moment? Take me back like 4 years ago, before you started with holacracy. How did you come to that decision? What ignited that need to organize yourself in a different way?
Let's say the actual idea about way of organizing is much older, because I have, historical background or studied history. I was always amazed that, let's say, the way companies are organized, I would call management a kind of dictatorship. So there's somebody who is the CEO and he decides for all the other people what to do. And that reminds me about a kind of monarchy. The king decides for other people what has to happen in his or her country. So it's a process of which goes back much longer. And in the past, there were also, let's say, structures which were much more decentralized. So you have corporations, perhaps monasteries, or also the state. And there also has been, for instance, a Dutch entrepreneur, Eckhard Winssen, who was in mid-80s a very successful software entrepreneur, and he invented something like cell structure. And he decided when an entity has, I think, 50 people, it's split and given own responsibility for hiring, etc. And yeah, he grew his company BSO in an excellent way, and wrote about it. But let's say the starting point of Holacracy was that I found this whole way of organizing this structure in a, let's say, with an IT module, which really makes sense. This whole Grassrock operating system, and then we said, okay, just let's try if this really works in practice.
And how did that go? You decided let's go for Holacracy, let's implement it. What did you notice? What changes did you notice once you started implementing Holacracy?
Let's say we asked Diederik Jansen of Energized to help us. And then I think you had a kind of common process. A lot of people who implemented Holacracy know the whole discussion about signing the constitution, which was easy for us because we are four owners. And everybody said, okay, let's try, which, let's say, in hindsight, is something which was lucky, because if somebody would have opposed, we couldn't have started. So let's say, if you ask me now, what did you learn? I would say, we're lucky we signed the constitution, but I think it would have been much more easier for a lot of companies if you don't have to sign the constitution and just could start, and then see how it goes. And then you have the normal process that you start to implement it and create circles. Although, let's say from a kind of dogmatic point of view, I think that you could just start with the tactical. So we did the whole program and governance and all the circles and big brainstorming sessions, how to totally, let's say, redevelop the company. And I would say lessons learned are I would start much smaller. Just keep the normal teams and let's say the people who are in charge of the teams, I would give them the lead link role, and then from that existing situation just start experimenting, just to avoid a kind of dogmatic discussion, shall we do or shall we not do this experiment, because in the end it's not that Holacracy is totally different from normal organizations. A tactical meeting is a meeting. It's much more efficient. And if you just see people who visit us now and just attend these tactical meetings, they just say, okay, that's interesting and that's nice, because it's much more efficient. And you can, let's say, from the starting point, you can skip the whole dogmatic discussion.
Yeah, you talk a little bit about the tactical meeting already, something that you might start with. In hindsight, you wouldn't go all in from the start, but maybe start a little bit with tactical meetings and working from the teams that you already have. But still, starting with Holacracy, it also means restructuring your entire organization. You now work not with job titles, but in roles and circles. That's quite a big change.
Yeah, but I'm not quite sure if it's so different. So if you would just say that the normal organization, which has a sales department or a marketing department or an IT department, why can't you just keep, let's say, these departments, the departments there, yeah, like they work now? So if you have a marketing department, I would just call the marketing circle. And the person who is in charge of this department, I would give this person a lead link role. And then you would start to discuss with the lead link, does it make sense to have a moderator or a facilitator? And would it be helpful to have somebody who has a more secretary kind of role? And these are things which also in normal organizations exist. So if you have board meetings in other organizations, you would have, for instance, somebody who is responsible for the protocol. In a lot of cases, it was the secretary of the board. Or you have structures where, when discussions are very intense, then you ask an external moderator to moderate this meeting. And then you have more or less exactly the same structure which you have in Holacracy, and that you have lead link and you have facilitator and you have a secretary and this kind of stuff. So it's not that different from what you can find in other corporations.
That sounds promising for organizations who are looking for a different way to work or to start with Holacracy, that it's not that different. What would you say are the benefits of structuring your organization like this or working with Holacracy, and what are the limitations?
I would say, just to take, for instance, the tactical, let's say the meeting, because it's so structured, it's more efficient and it's more balanced, and people will just like the way of working together much more than an ordinary meeting where everybody is, let's say, discussing a lot of topics and then the output is mediocre. But let's say, on the other hand, you will have companies or teams which are very disciplined and people don't, let's say, or agree on certain rules and discuss in a more proper way. And that's also something which we also know, let's say, for the parliamentary structure, you also have certain phases of discussion. So in the beginning you asked, did I really understand the proposal? And then you have a discussion going on about this proposal, and then you adapt and you say, okay, shall we change this proposal? That's something which, if you discuss laws in parliament, is exactly the same process. So my main goal is always, when they ask, yeah, what are the experiences, what would you do, what are the lessons learned, to make it smaller and just to say, it's not so exotic as you might think, because the bigger the dogmatic discussion is, the more discussions you have about shall we implement or not. So I always say, just attend a tactical meeting, and most people who are really fed up with inefficient meetings will say, okay, this meeting is really much more efficient, let's try this meeting. And if this is called a tactical in Holacracy, I would say that's not so important, just start to implement this way of doing meetings. And then you can just say, for instance, if we have a tactical meeting of half an hour, we have, let's say, topics discussed, amount of topics between 20 and 30 topics, and then all the people who attend this meeting say, okay, we never managed to discuss 20 or 30 topics in half an hour. And that should be the main conclusion.
Right. I hear you say, I hear you mention Parliament and the state. How do you make this comparison between how organizations are structured and how the state is organized?
Yeah, the funny thing is that, let's say, people who have an institutional background or studied law or politics, etc., they immediately see the comparisons between Holacracy and how the state is built. So, but you can also see it from the words or the wording. So the fact that the meetings are split, that you have a tactical where the daily work is discussed, getting things done is discussed, and the governance, which is also called a governance meeting, then I would say a lot of people can imagine that the word governance is something you already have heard before, because governance is the governmental process. So there should be a link. Probably there is a link with the word government we know. Yes, there is. But that's the same in Parliament. If you discuss a law, that's a different kind of meeting than if you discuss daily business in Parliament. So it's not that, let's say, Holacracy has invented splitting daily tactical stuff from governmental responsible stuff. That's split since centuries in Parliament. So, but the problem is that the more people discuss Holacracy who have, let's say, studied economics or don't realize this is, let's say, the normal structure, then they say, oh yeah, that's really true. Or, for instance, the word replink, representative chosen by the team, I mean, it's called House of Representatives. So that there is a link is, I would say, quite obvious.
You have mentioned the way that you implemented Holacracy, that you might do it differently now, looking back. You've also been known to go beyond Holacracy. And one way of going beyond Holacracy is that you have elected leaders. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So, for instance, let's say Holacracy for us is just one way of organizing, and the history before Holacracy is probably 2,000 or 3,000 years. So there's a lot of stuff where people have thought about how to organize tribes or states or armies, or it doesn't matter. So there are so many examples from the past. And if you just take, for instance, the chosen lead link, and that's something which we, let's say, do a lot of experimenting with this way of organizing our our teams. That's also from a historical perspective, that if you take Essence 2,000 years ago, it's called primus inter pares, first among equals, and it's a kind of rotation system where people choose in their team the one who they think makes sense to be first among equals. And that's a very old principle, so we haven't invented this. This is, to our point of view, the main organizing principle, but it's also the smallest part or group in the Roman army had exactly the same principle. So I think 6 or 7 people, and they decided who is in charge of this small entity of the Roman Empire. So I would say a lot of those, let's say, mechanisms are from a logical perspective a normal thing, because let's say if you are chosen by your peers, you have a kind of moral authority given by your people, and which is different than somebody else from outside decides who is in charge of this team.
So how does this work in practice? I mean, do you have a different lead link every month? Or if I don't like my lead link, can I call for an election? Or how does this happen at VC?
Okay, to start with the last one, I mean, you always have a possibility. It's also kind of tension that you say, okay, I would like to put the election on the agenda. But the basic principle is just that you have, let's say, somebody who has a role for a half a year, and then you decide again, and then it makes sense to say, okay, I did it for half a year, now it's your turn, and then there's a discussion going on. But the example I always use is that, let's say, if you are a group of friends and you decide to organize a weekend every year, then you have the kind of same principle that you say, okay, we are 4 friends, and then every year somebody else is in charge of organizing the weekend. And it sure can be the case that people say, okay, one of those 4 people is the best in organizing weekends, but the kind of, let's say, acceptance in this group of people is everybody has the obligation to organize a weekend every 4 years. And it's a little bit the same, so it doesn't mean that it always works, because sometimes they say, okay, somebody did an excellent job and the other ones are just entered the company or not mature enough or have problems at home and you don't want to give them extra responsibility. But the idea is, from 2 points of view, it makes sense. On the one hand, it is that the authority is given by your peers, and on the other hand, it's the way of treating the one who is responsible is different when you know that next time it's your turn.
Right. But wouldn't you say that maybe some people are more suited to be a leader or to be a lead link than others? And don't you see it happening that some people get chosen over and over again?
Yeah, that's probably also something which just takes time. But let's say, and that's also Holacracy, that the role of lead wing link shouldn't be too big or too important. So the goal would be, and that's also, let's say, in total for the whole company, that and that's let's say also our point of view, if you would let's say judge the quality of the company, you could say, if the people who are in charge of the company or the lead links are not there, or are not there anymore, the company can just survive. And the opposite would be, let's say, would be that you have a very bad company. So if you would take, let's say, this whole discussion also about leadership, if you have the strong leader and you take the strong leader away and the company doesn't work anymore, then I think you're doing something wrong. So it should be the opposite. So the opposite, the goal of a circle should be that people are, all or most of the people are able to have this kind of responsibility, but the stronger the rest of the team is and the smaller the leadling role is, the easier this will be, let's say, possible.
So in this way, in this sense, when you work with Holacracy, you don't have your traditional hierarchy anymore. You don't have your manager anymore. And you already mentioned a leadling role shouldn't be too big. Responsibility lies a lot within the team. How do people manage their workload, or how do they decide how to divide their time? How do you prevent people to be overwhelmed with all the responsibility they now have?
I think that also there's not a huge difference between, let's say, normal structures. So if somebody, let's say, take our advisors who advise clients on their mortgage, their main role is to be advisor. So if they would work in another company and they would be in the team where the advisors are, that's not so different from what we do. I would say in every team you should level your workload. And you can institutionalize this no matter what kind of structure you have. So in the past, you had once a day all the post was coming in, and then they opened all the letters, and then they just said, okay, how many letters do you have, and do you have more complicated clients? And then the workload was balanced. Now, nowadays with the internet, it's very difficult because you get always. Clients coming in via email, or so you have to be a little bit more strict on who has more and who has less, and then you have metrics, and then you have the lead link who has to monitor this workload, and then go to the team members and say, okay, I see you have too much, and somebody else has a little bit a capacity, and then you have to balance this. But I don't know if that's so different from other companies.
Is it still the responsibility of the leadling to monitor the workload amongst team members, or is that also people's own responsibility now?
I think it is a combination of both. You always have, on the one hand, you hope that everybody feels so responsible to speak up and to say, I have too much. Is there somebody who can help me? And on the other hand, you hope that people say, I have a little bit of capacity. Is there somebody who I can help? And that's something, for instance, we have a lot of circles who have daily tacticals, and it's always on the agenda. So there's always workload is asked every morning. Do you have too much, or do you have capacity? And what is also asked, for instance, what we have integrated is Eat the Frog, it's called.
Eat the Frog?
Eat the Frog. Yeah, Eat the Frog. And that means it's something which you are a little bit uncomfortable with. And you say, okay, that's the difficult thing I have to solve today. And let's say from a productivity way of thinking, this is the thing you should do first, because it blocks your whole productivity for the whole day. And everybody speaks out every morning, what is my Eat the Frog today?
And Eat the Frog today, yeah.
And that really helps. So, because then somebody says, oh, I had this before, I can help you, etc. And it's kind of, it's becoming normal to discuss something which you're a little bit uncomfortable with.
Yeah, because that's what was triggered with me when you said that. It's like, you do need to feel comfortable expressing, like, I have too much work, or feel comfortable to express that you might be able to handle a little bit more work. How do you make sure that safety is there?
How do we handle the safety? I think, let's say, the starting point is that people are willing to help each other. And if you create a structure to facilitate this, it really works out well, because people want to help each other, because they also want to be helped by others when they need help. So that's the normal situation. And then you can build a lot of, let's say, difficult structures, and then you harm this kind of starting point. So, for instance, if you would say in a team of a certain amount of people, some people get bonuses at the end of the year. Let's say 4 of 10 get a bonus and 6 will not get a bonus. And 2 have to leave the company, and then you create a kind of environment which is unsafe, and people don't want to help each other, because you know, okay, when I really only go for my own goals, I'm the one who gets the bonus, and my colleagues don't. So it's in a way very interesting that we harm the normal situation by mechanisms. So the starting point would be to skip this kind of mechanisms which harm cooperation, and that's something which a lot of companies do. I mean, they abolish bonuses, but for instance, we also delinked the salaries and performance, so that also helps. So if, let's say, for instance, for example, the lead link would earn more because this lead link role is rewarded differently, yeah, then people want to become the lead link because they want to earn more money. They don't want to do this job because they like it from an intrinsic motivation. No, everybody wants to be the lead link because you earn more. Yeah, and that's the situation in which we, let's say, harmed or do harm organizations.
This is so interesting. It's like you could almost say that salary or rewards kind of stand in the way of intrinsic motivation. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, but everybody knows, for instance, the Peters Principle.
Yeah.
So people learn that people are promoted until the level of incompetency. Yeah, and that's something if you realize that you earn more, it's very normal to expect that people strive to become the leader of this team. But we also know that, let's say, for instance, in IT companies, they solve this much earlier than, for instance, in the financial sector, where they just said, okay, I'm a developer, I don't want to be in charge of the team. And then another developer would say, no, I also like to coordinate this team or this project. And it's totally fine. But then people decide on what they want to do and not on if they earn much more money for that or not.
That's so interesting. I think the salary topic is a very interesting topic to talk a little bit further about. But let's save that for our next podcast. For today, thank you so much for being on the podcast, and let's continue the conversation about your salary structures at Feezy. It's very interesting. I would love to hear more about that.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's podcast. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll be back next week.